Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Diversity in Selling, the only podcast dedicated to selling in diverse business markets. And now, today's podcast, hosted by David Tyson, CEO, sales leader, and millennial expert.
Good morning and welcome to Diversity in Selling. I'm David Tyson, your host, and it's a beautiful Friday. So welcome everyone, and thank God that we are here and blessed to be a part of this beautiful day in the United States of America. Today I am excited. I am enthusiastic. I don't know how many different kinds of words that I could describe to talk to you about the person that we have on our as our guest today. In Diversity and Selling. Today we have Al Rutherford. Al is the founder and managing partner with Rutherford and Associates. Al has traveled the globe putting on events and conventions for Fortune 500 companies and served as the trip advisor to President Clinton. As managing partner of Rutherford and Associates, he works with a select number of clients furnishing their leadership with its strategic direction. Please join me this morning as we welcome our guests to Diversity in Selling, Al Rutherford, and Al will provide us insight in terms of diversity in the events and conventions market from the perspective of a 26-year-plus expert. Al, welcome to Diversity in Selling. How are you this morning?
David, I'm doing great, and I must say your enthusiasm is catching. I'm very, very pleased to be with you, and thanks for the invitation.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I know we have caught you on one of your many, many busy days traveling. Fortunately, you're actually in the United States today, so that's awesome, and I really appreciate that you taking the time to be with us. So, Al, I just gave a brief introduction, not only of yourself, but your organization. I know you've been around since the early 1990s. And the topic and the overall focus of Diversity in Selling is to talk about, you know, diversity as it relates to sales and how it works. And in your case, you know, you're in the meeting and events marketplace. Obviously, you've done it for a number of years. You're probably, I'm going to say to some degree, probably a pioneer in that arena. But, you know, maybe share your insights with the radio audience in terms of your perspective on the marketplace itself and how you see diversity in this space.
Well, David, thanks again for the opportunity. And the way that I would position this industry, the convention and meetings industry, is this way. Our firm is a firm that focuses on communications and event management, and we work across any number of industries. Could be high tech, computer, software, could be medical, pharmaceutical, just a variety of different industries, science and technology, or what is referred to as STEM. And what we see across each of those industries is a desire on the part of the company or the association or the entity that is interested in creating the event is an interest in diversity and an interest in reaching and contacting the millennial. Now, the reason that diversity is so important, and I remember, you know, one of my clients sitting down, the president of an engineering firm, and I was in his office, and we were talking about creating a program or an event that would be held on a college campus with the idea of being able to recruit diverse talent. And I asked him, why is this important to you? Why is this event or why is diversity important to you? And his response to me was, Al, we need to look like our customer's customer. And so it was very insightful. And what it told me was he wasn't just in this for a feel good. He saw it as a business imperative. Because,
right.
David, as you know, if a CEO thinks something is, you know, nice or social or just, you know, something I got to do to check a box, they aren't going to be dedicated to it for very long. But
right.
If they see it as a business driver, as something that will have an effect on the bottom line, they will be much more likely to follow through and put their efforts and their intensity behind making it a success. So diversity has to be viewed as an important business driver, and I also believe that it's important that those who are in leadership incentivize part of their employees' compensation on the diversity goals. If diversity is important in the organization, compensation has to be tied to that.
That's a really interesting perspective, Al, and I knew I would get a plethora of information from you. And I loved your piece because, you know, that's one of the taglines of this show is diversity equals bottom line. You know, when you stop and think about it, yeah, CEOs, they don't invest in, and of course they have a checks and balances in their systems where, you know, the CFO is sitting there saying, well, you know, this might feel good, this might look good, but, you know, what is it really doing to our bottom line? What is it doing for our stockholders, our investors, and things along those lines? So
that's
it's
right.
Apropos.
That's right.
Yeah.
Are we driving, the question is, are we driving shareholder value?
Yeah. That's extremely important, and I get that, and that's one of the things that I really want to impress upon people. It's not going back to the days of just, you know, let's say the affirmative action, although the Supreme Court upheld, you know, affirmative action in the case of University of Texas yesterday. So, there's still value associated with that. That is definitely the case. Well, tell the audience, maybe just give the audience a little bit more insight, you know, into your background, how you got involved in this space, and, you know, what are some of the things that you see as the things that keep you engaged in this space? And for someone that millennial that you mentioned, as an example, you know, I talked to a millennial about this a few weeks ago. You know, why would a millennial be interested in really even getting into this space?
Sure. Well, David, I began my career on the hotel side, and I came to the hotel business straight out of SMU with a dual degree in advertising and public relations.
Okay.
And I had interviewed with a number of local ad agencies and had gotten down the path with one in particular. And I was at lunch. They had wanted to take me out to lunch, and I was having lunch with guy from the agency, and he said, you know, Al, everybody at the agency loves you, but to be honest with you, we're a little concerned that you won't be able to connect with middle America. And I said,
interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting. That was code word back in the 80s.
I got it.
So I decided I would look to get into public relations, and when I was working on my senior project at SMU, my senior project or my thesis was on how do you go about launching a hotel from a public relations standpoint. So I had created the graphics and the visuals and press releases and things of this sort to launch this hotel. And so I just said, listen, I'm going to get into the hotel business with the idea of going into hotel PR. And what happened, I went into the management training program and actually loved operations and just really enjoyed that aspect to the extent that when a position came open in the PR department, I passed on it and stayed in operations. And,
okay.
And I was very fortunate. I have a good working relationship with the GM. I moved up rapidly, you know, through the organization. When I left, I was their senior hotel manager, taking direct responsibility and projects from the general manager. And I was recruited, interestingly enough. He pulled me into his office one day and he said, well, Al, I've gotten a call from the Dallas Convention Bureau. They're looking for a national sales manager, and I'm going to recommend you because you understand operations. But if you get a little get some knowledge on the sales side, it's going to just incredibly improve your marketability. And so here was a guy who was very solid in his career, very successful in his career, and had taken the time to do some mentoring of me. He had given me some projects of increasing responsibility, and fortunately they had gone well. And so he saw something in me that I had not envisioned, because I was just thinking operations was going to be the way to go. But he said, improve your marketability, improve your knowledge in the industry by taking on this sales role. I interviewed, they hired me, and shortly thereafter had a good track record with Marriott, came knocking. And wanted to know, well, what do you want to do with your career? And I said, well, I want to become a general manager. And that's really what I thought I was going to do. I was going to get my own hotel and run hotels. And
okay.
So they said, we can do that. And so I went into the Marriott General Manager Development Program, and I was leading a sales team, and I was working with a client, and the property – was a little small, but I'd come up with some creative ways to manage that. And over dinner, she asked me, she said, have you ever thought about event management? And I said, no, not really. I'm working on getting my own hotel. I'm probably about 18 months away from that, and that's really my focus. And we just continued to talk, and I continued to sell the hotel over dinner. And a couple of weeks later, doing my follow-up, I called her back and said, you know, we really want to earn your business. Have we answered all your questions? Is there anything else that I can do for you? And she said, well, no, I think we're good. I said, well, have we earned your business? And she said, yes, we're going with your hotel. And I said, well, I appreciate
awesome.
That. And I asked her,
awesome.
Yes. I asked her, said, well, were you serious or were you just joking at dinner about event management? And she said, oh, no, I was serious. If you had your own company, we'd give you all our business in the Southwest. And
oh, okay.
Talk about incentives. I began to think about, okay, Marriott GM entrepreneur. And so I went back and forth for a little while and kicked it around and said, listen, here's an opportunity company. I asked, how many of these meetings would you do a year? And she said, oh, we do 4 to 5. And I ran the numbers. And I said, well, given the return, I could work with this. And it also said to me, there could be an opportunity out there to offer services to other companies. And so that was in late 1990, early 91, and I launched the firm. I was a one-man shop for about the first 10, 12 years. I used a lot of independent contractors, but after I – and in that time frame, David, there was a stint as a consultant, as you mentioned, to the White House, producing presidential events on a global basis, both internationally and domestically. For the first 5 years as a consultant, the last two, I did accept an appointment as Associate Director of Presidential Advance and also served as the President's Trip Director. So I was responsible for leading teams in the field that were producing presidential events or traveling on board Air Force One with the President and talking to our teams in the field and troubleshooting, you know, any issues on the plane, any issues into the cities that we were headed. And so after I left the White House on January the 20th, 2001, when President Clinton did, I got back to Dallas as quickly as I could and said, okay, here's an opportunity. We need to look at building out the firm. And so it's with a lot of pleasure that I can tell you that Rutherford Associates is the largest African-American-owned event management firm in the country. And
wow.
So over the last...
Wow, I didn't know that. That's awesome, Al.
Yes.
That is awesome.
So thank you. Thank you very much. Yes,
wow.
So over the last 15 years, we have been able to grow the firm, working primarily in three areas. We have our corporate clients, we have our association or nonprofit, and then we also have some government clients. And some of the corporate business is more focused on sales meetings, new product mm-hmm. launches, things of that nature. The association
right.
business is primarily focused on the diversity market. And what we're doing on the government side is also, interestingly enough, helping them to build, to create programs that engage diverse clients. For example, the Air Force is looking for ways in which to attract and retain women. That's a strategic imperative for them. They feel that it is vital that they attract talented women, but also retain them. And,
yeah.
and so they're looking wow. at what kind of benefits, what's important to that demographic to keep them engaged, and then what kind of programs do we need to develop from a conference perspective to educate them on what we're talking about. Because you have to keep in mind that typically clients hold events for one of three reasons, and sometimes it's a combination. But it's usually to educate, to motivate, or to recognize. Those are really the three key drivers for an event. And I always explain to clients when they come to me and say, listen, we want to do this project or event. First question I ask is, do you have a budget and do you have a program?
Show me the money. All right.
That's right.
Okay.
Because, hey, I can tell you very quickly, based on your budget, how much of this program is realistic.
Right. Okay.
And if you've got a program and you don't have a budget, well, we can help you. We can help you work that out. We can help you put some numbers there so that you can see what the investment looks like, and you can determine, can I get the ROI out of this investment that I'm looking for? Because, mm-hmm. again, at the end of the day, a vehicle, or I should say an event, is really a vehicle by which you drive a message. And it could be a message about that organization. It could be a variety of messages. But that's what really, at the end of the day, what an event is. It's the vehicle to drive a message.
Okay. You know, it's interesting. I'm going to repeat. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and that's what we do. We help our clients communicate their message.
Okay. Well, I like these three components that I just picked up: educate, motivate, and recognize. being a salesperson myself and having run a sales organization, you know, I understand that when I've put on national sales meetings, you know, those types of meetings, mm-hmm. you know, they really were designed to focus on these three things. And in a part of that, quite frankly, had to do with the ROI and, you know, how you, if you take someone to, you know, the Colorado and you go skiing, well, you know, you better have some education involved in that. That's for sure.
That's right.
You better have some education involved in that. And certainly the motivational component, you know, bringing in keynote speakers to accent and accelerate your meeting, and then recognizing those salespeople and sales managers that have achieved their goals and objectives on a quarterly basis, on an annualized basis. I mean, I get that. I hadn't heard it quite put that way before, but you just summed it up, you know?
That's what it comes down to at the end of the day.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned women. One last piece of this, let's talk about talk about millennials, and I'm gonna be a little bit sarcastic about this, particularly because it deals with your alma mater, SMU, and I'm interested. I've made some notes here because when you mentioned, you know, the code word, and I get it, but I'm thinking here you are, you're a graduate of SMU, you know, one of the most upper middle class universities, you know, in the country. Okay. Yep. And you're not able to get along with middle America. Okay. We know that was definitely cold for sure. But at the same time, I was thinking about this technology a few years ago. I think I shared with you. I was asked by a local Dallas reporter to go on the Good Day Show with Fox 4 News, and the topic was millennials in the workplace. So during the interview, they did a cutaway and they went to SMU, and they were utilizing SMU as the campus where they were interviewing, individuals that were pending graduates, you know, for that mm-hmm. year. And I remember one of the guys saying, well, he said, what do you think your starting salary ought to be? And he said, well, kind of low, maybe like 70, 80,000 a year. When we came back on, Tim and I, we both had this big laugh. I said, wow, that just tells us where millennials, what the millennial mindset is in terms of their expectations. So, yes. You know, again, I just had a little bit of fun with that because that's your alma mater. But at the same mm-hmm. time, you mentioned millennials in particular as a part of that diverse group of clientele. So talk a little bit about millennials.
Sure. Well, quite often, we deal with recruiting conferences and companies are looking to bring in millennials to their organization, and I was sitting in on a meeting where a PhD from a East Coast university was talking about millennials and what they're looking for and what interests them, and he made the statement, said that millennials were kids who received trophies for participation, mm-hmm. and that kind of informs their view relative to where they anticipate coming in, because he was saying, well, when they show up, they believe that they have achieved something. They're there. They're, mm-hmm. You said be here, and I'm here, and so now, they're ready to take over the company. Well,
right.
I had a young lady in my office. She was interviewing for a position with us, and I asked her, I said, if you felt challenged in the position, if you felt this was the right place, and if you, felt you were growing, how long of a commitment would you be willing to make to the organization? And her words were, oh, I could make a long-term commitment, at least 2 to 3 years.
Okay. That's a long-term commitment for a millennial. It really is. Okay.
Exactly. And so we just have to be, wise and attuned and able to listen to what is on their mind and what is important, and to be able to, effectively communicate that, okay, I recognize that this is what's important to you. This is what's important to the company. And can we come to some type of happy medium or understanding? But it is a challenge from what I am seeing when it comes to major Fortune 500 companies recruiting, David.
Yes.
They have told me that when I was coming out of school, and this was, 30 years ago now, so things have changed. But
right.
I would go and research the company. I would go and take a look at the annual report. I would see
right.
who's on the board of directors. Where was the stock price? Who's the CEO? That was then. Today, it is much more likely that the company is going to have to educate that interviewee on who they are.
Right.
So because the challenge, the war for talent, is so significant, the student or the graduate may not be familiar with that brand. And so I'm hearing that the companies are now having to educate the prospect on who they are and sell them on why they want to work for Company X, which is a complete reversal from where I was 30 years ago. So it shows you how the times have changed.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's interesting that you would say that, because it's so much easier, quite frankly, to search a company now, to research information on a company because of the internet and LinkedIn and all the other social media that's out there. So that's an interesting perspective. Yeah.
It's a breeze to do that research. Man, you can find out anything you want on a company, on a CEO.
Right.
Just hit the internet. It's out there.
Yeah. So it's a mindset. It's a mindset that we are facing. So Al, I want to take a quick commercial break, but when I come back, I want you to tell the audience, if you can share just a little bit with the audience in terms of where you see your goals for Rutherford & Associates between now and the end of 2016. Al, we'll be right back, so stand by.
All right.
The last week in March typically represents the end of first quarter. If you have been goal-focused, it's time for your accountability review. So here's the question. Did you achieve your business, personal, and financial goal for first quarter? If you achieved your personal, business, and financial goal for first quarter, then you're on the path to success in 2016, and congratulations. On the other hand, if you missed your goal, it may be time to adjust or move that goal into second quarter. And of course, if you are part of the 2% of overachievers, then it's time for a Coke and a smile. No matter how you ended quarter one, stay goal-focused and stay accountable. So Al, here we are. You know, we're all focused. You're one of the lead. You've indicated you're the leading, you know, African-American company in your space. You know, how do you win? How do you win today? And what's going to cause and Rutherford & Associates to continue winning in 2016?
David, good question. And the way that I would answer that is we just have to continue to do good work. We have a very good reputation in the industry. I sit on a couple of client advisory boards, which helps us to broaden our reach. But at the end of the day, it's what I call the say-do ratio. We have to be about doing what we say we're going to do. That's the most important thing. We're on track to have our best year ever this year, and it's because of my team. I have to provide strategic direction, but then they have to come through, because I can't be everywhere. So I've got to imbue in them what success looks like, and it means taking the opportunity to understand what success looks like from the client perspective, because we understand we can't be successful if the client isn't successful. I also tell my folks that they don't pay us by, they pay us to do. You know, when you hire Rutherford & Associates, you're hiring a result. You're not hiring us to try. So we stay on track with that. We exceed client expectations, and that allows us to be successful long term.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Al, just kind of a closing thought or closing. How would, you know, audience reach Rutherford & Associates? What's the best way to reach you?
It's very easy. We have a website, www.teamrutherford.net. Also, direct to the office, 214-438-1185. Or shoot me an email, alrutherford@teamrutherford.net. We're very reachable, very accessible.
Awesome. So communications is the key. When you think about an event, think about, you know, the end result. Think about, you know, what's your budget for that event.
That's right.
The overall focus of any event is to educate, motivate, and recognize Al, I expected that I would get expertise that you would not imagine, and I've gotten it, Al. So I want to thank you for being with us today on Diversity in Selling. So Al, be blessed and go out and close something today.
Man, I'm going to work on that right now. I appreciate you, David. Great talking to you.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot, Al.
Bye now.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So a word from Al Rutherford from Rutherford & Associates, 26 years plus expert in the meetings and conventions marketplace. He shared some great thoughts for us and our audience on diversity and the bottom line in terms of the CEO has to be invested in it. And, of course, if the CEO isn't invested in it, the leadership in the organization isn't invested in it, it really, really isn't going to work. So our time is up for today. I want to leave you with this simple message. Keep the faith because faith works.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. For more information, join our LinkedIn group, Diversity in Selling, or email us at diversityinselling.com. Until next time, have an amazing week.